7:30. Welcome, everyone, to our workshop on New Directions in Learning. And if you don't know me, I've been working with distributed learning for about the last 2 years, mostly on the UConn Community Learning Networks project. And for those of you who don't know what community learning networks are, the sort of formal definition that they started with is that there are networks of individuals utilizing technologies to communicate and learn together to achieve common goals and purposes. So that's the formal definition that it started with, at least in Canada.
So about 3 years ago, we signed on with Office of Learning Technologies, so a three-year contract, to establish community learning networks in the Yukon. And so this is kind of the culmination. We wanted to have a workshop to let everybody know what are the possibilities, what have we done so far, what are some of these examples, and where can you go in the future? You know, what are some of the possibilities that technology is opening up to learners in the Yukon and around the world, really? So the format of the workshop, I know some people found it a little confusing, but we wanted to blend some big picture stuff with some hands-on stuff. So Stephen's going to start the day with kind of a hands-on presentation, a little bit about RSS, weblogs, that kind of thing. And then in the afternoon, it's going to be Canary, the new Canary CA4, CNET4 type, some possibilities there. And then this afternoon, the final presentation will be Joanne Davidson from the Department of Education, Grant from Distributed Learning, and Amanda Graham, who's representing the University of the Arctic. They again will give big picture of where things are going, what kind of technologies are available, what options the UConn learners have. And through the hands-on, more practical portion of the day, which is what was confusing some people about it, is that we're going to have open labs at lunchtime and after the final presentation. And in those labs, the technologies will be there for you to play with. And that's the thing that we hope you'll do, is take away some of those links, some of those ideas, and pursue them on your own when you have time, and experience as much of the possibilities as you can while you're here. Okay? Anybody have any questions?
Sorry, this is Trudy. I have a question. Can you put Stephen, other than the fact that we couldn't see you, could you put Stephen on a full screen?
How's that?
Perfect.
Sorry about that. I broke my own rules. There.
Thank you.
Were you able to at least hear what I said?
Oh, yeah. You're talking pretty loud, sir.
Okay. Well, I'm standing right over the mic, so if you go deaf, let me know. So just so those of you who weren't at Stephen's presentation last night, through the funding from the Office of Learning Technologies, we were able to fly Stephen Downs out here. He's an e-learning researcher working with the National Research Council right now. But more importantly, he is the author of Stephen's Web, which is kind of a practice what you preach example of what we talked about last night, which is his view of how learning should happen. And if any of you have taken the opportunity to visit the website, you certainly should. And I'm not going to say too much more because I want Stephen to have a chance to really give you some practical examples. His presentation this morning is called RSS Blogs and Other Cool Stuff. And he's going to lead you through some examples and try and give you a sense of what learning can be, self-directed and self-actuated and under your own control. So, welcome, Stephen.
Thanks. You're wondering what this is. This is just me recording the talk. Because one of the things I like to do, I started doing it about 6 months or so ago, is recording the talks and posting the audio online. We'll get rid of this, though. And if you're wondering, the music that you were hearing before we started was Nico Case. So, and this is my website that was just mentioned. And I've designed this website specifically as what I think learning of the future will look like. It's designed specifically as a learning and professional development website. And a lot of the things that I'll talk about... Oh, you guys are breaking up over there. Check my fly. No, that's okay. Now I'm wondering... Anyhow, the idea, the sort of thing I was talking about yesterday, how many of you were here yesterday? Okay, a lot of you. The sort of thing that I was talking about yesterday with content aggregation and blogs and wikis and things like that, it's a much more dynamic, much more chaotic way of organizing learning. And something like this, not necessarily this, this is just my take on it, but something like this is what comes out the other end. I call this a professional development website because most of the people that it's directed to are people who are working in instructional technology or new media. And the feedback that I've gotten is that it is being used by those users in that intended sense, that people are using it as a learning tool, as a way to maintain continuous professional development in their work. I'm not going to talk about my website so much because you can always go and explore the website on your own. I'm going to talk about some of the concepts and some of the tools that underlie the website. Now, a lot of the stuff on my website, I've written my own version of these tools. But the tools that are out there now are out there. They're available for everyone to use. And you can do somewhat like this on your own using these different tools. Okay. Now my wiki is broken. I'm going to start. What I'm going to do, I'm just going to run through, just hitting them one by one, the different options that are out there, the things that the tools that I will describe have in common. First of all, everything that I'm hitting here is open source. It's freeware. You can download it off the internet, install it on a web server yourself, and usually it runs, and it runs reasonably well. Sometimes it's a little harder to install than others. Scoop, for example, was a bit of a pain to install. Other times, it's you download it, you run a little install script, and it runs. It just runs beautifully. The other thing that all of these things have in common is that they are ways of generating what might be called user-produced or consumer-produced content. They are ways in which the people who were traditionally thought of as the consumers of content are able to turn it around and create their own content. Now I'm going to start with a group of technologies known generically as content management systems. This is one called Scoop. It's written in a programming language called Perl. I love Perl. Perl is the language that I write in when I write software. Practical reporting, I can never remember what it is, practical report extraction language or practical reporting and extraction language, something like that. Doesn't matter, it's Perl. The whole world is waiting for Perl 6 to come out. It should be very soon. Perl 5, which is the version that I use, has been around for like 10 years. That's one of the things I like in a computer language, that it stays the same for 10 years. Anyhow, what Scoop is a content management system, as I said, and its intention when it was designed, as the name suggests, was to create news or journalism type sites. A lot of sites out there on the internet are run by Scoop, and you'd never notice it because, you know, they've removed the Scoop logo, put their own logo in, styled it themselves. Here's a site that runs on Scoop, for example. That's Scoop. You'd never know it, but that's Scoop. And here's another one. Oops, where are they? Oh, there we go. That's a right-wing U.S. political site. Always look around and see what's out there. That also is running on Scoop. And again, the idea of these content management systems is that you put your own design, your own skin on the site, so that you have your own branding, your own identity. As with all of these things, in order to make it work, you log in. Now, have I logged in already? I think I have, haven't I? I was checking them this morning and logging in just to make sure I remembered what my password was, because I've reached password exhaustion. And now it says I'm still logged in, I guess. Okay, well, if it was there... Oh, here we go. I'll log out and then log back in again. That's better. There we go. That's what it looks like when you just arrive on it. It's a little login. So I'll log in. I'll type my name and my password. Man, it's the wrong password. Oops. Now I'm logged in. And the idea here is I click Submit Story, and it's going to give me a little window where I'll choose a section, News. I only have one section, Auto Format, sure. Title, Hello Yukon. And now I can type my story. Which actually is a lie, so I'm not cold at all. But hey, who am I to stop the stereotypes? I click submit, and I'm done. As a writer, I'm done. That's all I had to do to put content in the site. Now, Scoop is a moderated site, so now I, as the site administrator, I log on a little bit later, and I see, oh, there's a story that's been submitted. And so I can look at the story. And, oops, that's not the story. Oh, that's right. If it was another user, the story would be there. Since I am the administrator, it just went straight in. So we'll go back to the home page, and there's my story. And the point here is, that's all I had to do in order to make this work. I just type the story into the form, and voila, the story appears on the page. And that's the way these sites work. They take all of the technical stuff out of creating a very functional news website. Now, usually the stories consist of more than four words. And so, you know, it'll be a bit longer and be the headline and so on. The Scoop, the users are able to make comments. You can give users diaries so that users can, well, of course this will be empty, but users can sort of create their own sub-sites within the site. Users can set their own preferences, user info and so on. I'm super user, yay me. They can adjust their own display preferences, number of stories to show, the font, face, topics, so on. So the user is very much able to customize their experience with this. And if we go to Tacitus, again, each story, here's a story that somebody just typed in, and they're going on and on and on. And then, of course, you have the comment area, and the users are able to add comments as well. So this kind of content management system, again, is putting the capacity to create and host a fully fledged news site into the hands of, well, everyone. Here's another variation on the same theme. This is a site called PostNuke. And again, now, am I logged in or not? Yes, I am. See, I should have tested my logins, and then if I had been smart, I would have logged out. Okay, you are now logged out. Yes, well, I knew that. All right, so here I am. This will be wrong again. So I just log in. Remember me? Yes, please. Now it's going to log me in. Same concept. I can add a story to this somehow. Where is it? If you see it, tell me. There it is. Submit news. We're working with so many different menus, and all the menus are always different. Once you pick a system and start using it, it becomes like second nature. But if you're bouncing around systems like this, the submit news button is always in a different place. La di da di da di da. Whoops. Okay. And this one allows you to preview your item. So I've previewed it. It looks beautiful. And now I'll submit it. And again, notice how easy this is. As an administrator, these are all the different things. You can hardly see them there. But as an administrator, I can add stories. I can put messages on the site, links. I can put a banner on the site. I can set up the site so that it facilitates downloads. If this was a software site, for example. Reviews, sections, permissions, so that I can allow other people to put content on the site. I can put polls on the site. I have a little box with a daily quote if I want to do that. And so on. It takes a little bit to get used to something like this. You know, I sat down. It took me a couple of days. The install took me about 10 minutes. Quite seriously. And then I sat down. It took me about a day, 2 days to really sort of get a handle on the functionality of the site and learn the sorts of things that you can do with it. Most of your users, now that's as an administrator, most of your users will take about 10 minutes to figure out how to submit a story and get it up on the website. So let's go home and let's reload. My story didn't show up. I have waiting content. I'll have to preview it first. And do I like it? Yes, I like it. So let's post the story. Notice how this site is a moderated site. I, as the administrator, I receive the submissions. I approve them. I post them. And now it'll be up on the site. And there it is. Again, this display is completely customizable.
In order to just look at the site, do you have to have that software downloaded through the receiver?
No. For a reader, and in fact, any person other than the administrator, all you need to make this work is your web browser. And like I say, a lot of the sites that you see out there on the internet already are powered with this kind of system. This is PostNuke. There's PostNuke. There's Scoop. Drupal is another one. Zope is another one. I'm missing one. I can never remember the whole list of them. Anyhow, there are about five or six major content management systems like this that you can choose from. I'm pretty happy with PostNuke. It seems to work quite well. It was easy to install. Scoop was hard to install. Drupal is very popular as well. That's what I have to say about content management systems. Any comments or questions at this point?
So
these,
you think, will replace
learning management systems? These, where I see these playing a role is systems like this would be used by people to create learning content. Now, one of the things I didn't talk about, because it's coming up a bit later in the talk, is systems like this all automatically create what are called RSS feeds. So when you create content on a system like this, that puts it into a content distribution network, all automatically. You don't even need to think about it. And so I think that a slightly modified version of something like this would be used by people who are creating learning content. I think that it would not be quite as effective as a learning management system, although I think it, well, But that said, I mean, I'm going to hesitate and hedge here. I think in many cases it would be very effective. It would be especially effective as a supplement for a traditional class. If you're teaching a class and you wanted support, this would be the ideal tool. I would never use a learning management system to supplement a class. I would use something like this. But for standalone, completely online learning, you're probably going to want more support for the learning process than these provide. And in that case, I would probably recommend something like Moodle. I won't be talking about Moodle today because I don't have a running system on, but there will be other people talking about it today, so you will get exposed to it. And Moodle is just like this, except it's been modified, played around with a bit, in order to more specifically support learning. But content producers, something like this, perfect. Ideal. One of my ambitions, one of the things I intend to do over the next year or so, is to pick one of these systems and write what they call mods, modifications, specifically to support the production of learning objects, so that everybody will have a very simple, easy to install open source learning object authoring tool. That's one of the things I plan to do. That's why I was looking at Scoop, even though it was a pain to install. I write in Perl. Scoop is in Perl. It'd be very easy to modify. The rest of these systems are generally written in a language called PHP. I'm less comfortable with PHP, so I sort of, well, I'd rather use Perl if I possibly could, but I think that the system that gets written will actually end up being written in PHP, just simply because there's a better installed base to start from.
Do you have some examples of ways that people have used it as a supplement for traditional class?
System like this? Not off the top of my head, no.
Yeah, we do.
You do?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Because the Manila system is very
smart. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I haven't actually seen people using PostNuke or Drupal or any of those. Maybe George Siemens at Red River College. I don't know what the address of that site is, but I know he's been working on this stuff at Red River, working with Drupal and working with PostNuke.
There's several hundred of these kinds of systems. Some more popular, some charge, some don't.
Right.
There's actually a site we can post it on the workshop site that evaluates and shows the different features in different areas, the ones that work, the ones that don't, so that you can pick your poison.
Is that the site that lets people go in as administrators and try it out for themselves?
Could be. I can't recall now.
Yeah. There is a site out there, and I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but there is a site out there that will let you log on to any one of these things as an administrator and test drive it for yourself before you go through the process of installing it. Installing it's easy. Uninstalling it, a little more work. Kind of like Windows, aren't we? I was asked to talk about wikis. Now, I have a link for Downs Wiki, but I've taken Downs Wiki offline because it's being bombarded by a content spammer from Japan. Very annoying. But what a wiki is, I'll go to a different wiki. Oh, I can never remember the address, so... If you're wondering, this browser, by the way, that I'm using is called Firefox. And that little thing up there is a direct link to Google. I almost never type URLs anymore. I just type what I want in that little box, and Google takes me exactly where I want to go. And it's two page hits instead of one, but I'm typing like six letters instead of an entire URL. This is a wiki. In fact, this is the most famous wiki in the world. It's called Wikipedia. And what Wikipedia is an online encyclopedia. You might think, whoop-de-doo, big deal. But it's an online encyclopedia in the form of a wiki. Now, before I tell you what the implications of that are, let me share something. Wikipedia, I guess it's about 4 weeks ago, published its 1 millionth article. So there are 1 million separate articles in Wikipedia, and all kinds of articles. There's a little random page button here. So, squirt gun, that's an article. Lummi is a Native American tribe in western Washington. That's an article. Iringa is a town in Tanzania. That's an article. With a picture. 202 BC was a year. That's an article. Sugar Ray is a band from Orange County, California. A million articles. Encyclopedia. People have done reviews of the content and compared it to a traditional encyclopedia like Encyclopedia Britannica, and the content compares favorably. It turns out that an article on Wikipedia is just as likely to be accurate as an article in Encyclopedia Britannica. And Wikipedia has more readers than Encyclopedia Britannica. Wikipedia is free for anyone to use. Encyclopedia Britannica costs thousands of dollars. Guess which one has a brighter future? Now, the genius of Wikipedia is this. It's an ordinary website, as you can see, but any person in the world, anytime, can edit any page. And if you don't believe me, I'm going to pick one more random page. No, maybe not that one, because it's an index page, so. List of United States magazines. I want to pick something that's good enough. This is a county in Croatia. And those are counties of Croatia, in case anyone wanted to know. And here's the button. Edit this page. Here's the back end of Wikipedia. And typing sometimes adds extra characters. And yes, I'm actually going to save it. And here's what Wikipedia says now. It says hello to Verazdin from Whitehorse, Yukon, Canada. I have just changed the online encyclopedia. And that's the thing with a wiki. Anybody in the world, anybody, can change a page and put whatever they want on it. It does, but the thing is, there are so many people working on Wikipedia that the people who maintain Wikipedia vastly outnumber the spammers. And it's easier to fix content than it is to put content in.
So do you think someone's going to come and delete your hello message?
Count on. And it's only a matter of time. How much time? Hard to say. On some of the more popular pages, it'll be like a matter of minutes. This one might take a few hours before somebody sees it and replaces it. You see, what happens is, on any given page, you have a page history. And this is all the versions of this page that have existed up to this point in time. It saves every version. If somebody comes along and sees that defaces that page, they simply go to the previous version, and here's the change. That's the change from the previous version. And they can restore this page just by clicking a button. So they don't have to type anything in. They don't have to go in and remove the content or anything like that. And also, go back to the main page. where is it? They move these things around sometimes. There is a list, there's a page on this site somewhere, and like I say, it moves around a bit, called Changes. These are all the changes that have been made anywhere on Wikipedia. And as you can see, right, you know, 1848-05, 1848-08, you know, pages change every few seconds. In fact, I think mine might have scrolled off the page by now already. And what happens is people can see a change was made to this page. So they can go to the page immediately and see the change. Now, there are 10,000, as they say, core people working on Wikipedia who go in, check the changes, see what was added, make a correction as necessary, and move on.
Well, in terms of accuracy, the whole is quote-unquote policing itself.
That's right. Yes. And in fact, what happens is, because the articles are written by this mob of people who have all kinds of points of view, all kinds of opinions, all kinds of background knowledge, in order to get something in Wikipedia to stay, it has to be something that people will accept. And so the articles come out very much like encyclopedia articles. They come out very balanced, very neutral, sometimes very diplomatically written, so that what is expressed in Wikipedia is what everyone would agree to, which, of course, is all the essence of an encyclopedia. The thing is, it works. The evidence is there. 1 million articles, validated content we know is good, and millions and millions of users. Wikis are used in a lot of applications. You'll get to see later on a wiki, I think it's Brian Lance wiki, that's used specifically to talk about blogs and RSS and things like that. Wikis are used sometimes to support Classroom. They're incredible collaboration tools. They're very easy to learn how to use. Basically, there are some simple ways of being able to mark up your text so that you can have things like lists or tables or boldface or headlines. It's called wiki markup, of course. So they're very easy for people who want to add content to use. And when you create a document using a wiki, you're able to really collaborate really well because everybody is adding to this whole. There was it Dan Gilmore? Oh, better be. I believe it was Dan Gilmore. I might have the name of the author wrong. I'll find out. I don't have a brain anymore. I just use this. I'm looking for the author's name.
It is Dan Gilmore.
Great. Wrote this book, We the Media, on a wiki. And what he did is basically he opened the wiki, and of course he had his text, and he put his text in, and then he invited the world to edit it. I went in, I did some editing, I cleaned up some text and getting some stuff. Just a minor thing, and then he published it as a book. It's a bestseller. So I had a small hand in this book. It's kind of cool. You know, it's neat. I feel like, and part of what I'm trying to get across here is I feel a part of this now. Like, yeah, it's his book, obviously, but I feel like I've made it in a little way mine as well. So many uses for wikis. The caution with wikis is that they are open. So you do need a community of a certain size in order to maintain them. What we've discovered is that if you're just one person and you start up a wiki, you'll be one person with a wiki full of spam. that's less effective. So wikis are very much community tools. They're not so much personal publishing tools.
So how do you get to the critical mass?
Well, I mean, that's the $64 million question. It used to be $64,000 question, but there's been inflation. Typically, well, I mean, it's different for every site. With Wikipedia, there was a small core of people who started it, who just kept plugging away at it. And gradually, over like 8 years or so, they attracted a following. Other wikis, like Brian Lamb's wiki, he has a core group, and then he promotes the wiki at various talks that he does. And so they draw people together that way. In my case, if I was more diligent, my wiki, I would get that community based on the existing community surrounding my own website. So I'd invite people from my email list or my discussion list. I wasn't so diligent, so I didn't do that. It, as with all of these things, all of these sites, any of these open source sites, any of these community sites, they always begin with a small core of people who are passionately devoted to the site. And that's true of open source software. Any open source program you'll see the small core of people. Any of these community websites that you see, you'll see the small core of people. And for that matter, this is one of the things that I've been observing with education, because I'm able to go to a lot of places and do talks like this. Any town you go to, there'll be a core of people who are creating that online presence, that use of e-learning in that town. Well, you see the blog people here in this here in Whitehorse are that core, and we're looking over there at Watson Lake and Dawson, and those people are that core, and that's the way this always works, to my observation, anyways. Every time there's a group of people who get the idea, who seize on the idea, and it's the sort of idea where there's something open that can be shared by a community, but there's this core of volunteers that makes it work. Without that, it doesn't work. So I think that would be the answer. I guess that's a long-winded way of saying, how do you get it? How do you get the community? Hard work. There's no shortcuts. I've never seen a shortcut online.
And Wikipedia, how many people did you say were working on it?
10,000, give or take several thousand. All volunteer. Nobody makes a dime from Wikipedia. Think about that. I mean, we really have, and I can't emphasize this enough, we have moved into a new era of content. We've moved from an era where content is something that you hoard and you sell for money to something that people give as a contribution to the community. People don't see that change so much. You know, you look at record companies and publishers and journal articles and, you know, the journals, and they're all talking about selling content. But the way content is being produced online today is more and more by volunteers, people contributing to the community. I think it's way cool because it means there's all this content out there. It means that there's a common heritage that we're creating now for the first time that everybody in the world can share. And I think that the results of that, we haven't seen the result yet. We're still early days. But the result of that is going to be spectacular. When we look back 100 years from now, we will be amazed, first of all, that we built the internet, but we'll be even more amazed that people around the world contributed on a massive basis everything they knew to the internet for free. And it'll be looked back on as probably one of the greatest accomplishments ever. You know, certainly bigger than the pyramids. That's my take, anyways. And that's what gets me up in the morning. You know, imagine that. Look what we're building. We're building the whole store of human knowledge that anybody on the planet can access. Well, assuming they have wireless access. No, I'm just kidding. But they have to have access, and that's the other side of it. That's the reality you guys know here very well. You have to have the access to make this work. But that a lot of people are doing a lot of work on the access side as well. You go online, you do things like you look for underground Wi-Fi sites and things like that. There are all kinds of people trying to hack Wi-Fi systems to make them reach further and to talk about how you can make a Wi-Fi receiver out of a can of Pringles and things like that. And people actually do this. And they spend a lot of time and then they give it all to the community. Okay, that's Wikis. Any more comments or questions on Wikis? Okay, let's look at the blog people. I love that expression, the blog people. Oops, that's not where I wanted to go. Man. This is a site called Blogger. This site created a revolution. Oops, another password. What Blogger is a site that allows any person on the internet to create a blog. Now you might be asking, what's a blog? Well, those of you wearing the I'm Blogging t-shirts aren't asking this, but a blog is an ordinary website consisting of a sequence of entries or posts where the most recent post is first on the page. And then the next most recent is next. In other words, they're in reverse chronological order. And the idea is, you can go to a blog, you start reading from the top, and you read down until you see stuff you've already seen, now you're caught up. Now what Blogger did, is it made it possible for anyone to very easily create a blog. So, here's a blog. I could create another one if I wanted. Yeah, why don't I? Let's call it Yukon Mania. Why not? Alright, what do we want it to look like? We have some templates we can choose from here. You can, as it says, you know, easily edit these templates yourself, although I find a lot of people just pick one. Oops. Let's go wild and radical. How's that look? Do we like that? It's kind of hard to read, isn't it? Yeah, I was looking for something that, you know, conveyed cold. That looks nice. Let's go with that. So, we'll go with that. That's going to be our theme. That's going to create our blog. Oh, it's done. Start posting. Blogger is owned. It was started by a company called Pyra, and it got bought out by another company you might have heard of called Google. So this is a service offered by Google. Oops. I'm not a very good typist, am I? So, and they've added a bunch of things. I can put some in bold. I can put some in, like, huge text. Anyhow, let's publish. So I'm going to publish my post. Ah, good. And republish the entire blog, which consists of one post. And it's done. Let's have a look. And voila, the 4,000,001st member of the blogging community. Actually, probably more than that. That's my blog. And that's all it took to put stuff on the web. And now, as a brand new blogger, if I want to add another post, I just go back, I just go to blogger.com, log in. You always have to log in for these things. I type my post, I can HTML format it, I can upload images to it, or actually I can't upload, I can link images to it, anything I want. I've created a blog. And as I say, there are 4 million or whatever of these things out there.
So do these blogs stay up forever, or is there some administrators that have been used for a period of time, or are they just...
Generally, they just stay up. Because there's no real reason to take them down. Because all they're doing is consuming space, and disk space is cheaper than copy. So...
So you just type in a URL, right? I mean, you didn't make up a name.
Okay.
Like your Earl. You kind of made me a dog.
Oh yeah, I just made that up.
Yeah, but what about if somebody else already has that?
Then it'll tell you. It'll say, sorry, somebody else already has this. You'll have to pick a different name.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the one weakness. If somebody else up there has downs, it really bothers me. It might actually be me, and I. Yeah. Comment?
Can you search those 4 million blogs to find one that you're interested in?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, in fact, when you go to Google, what would be a good
time? Google search.
Yeah. That's a bit beaky. Oh, this might be... Yeah, isn't that cute? Well, this is just an ordinary web page. Sometimes if you put things like blog, that'll help. Welcome to my farming and beekeeping blog. It's that easy. Pardon?
My brother Rick.
My brother Rick. So, and this was not a pre-planned example. I didn't know before I was going to come here, before I came here, that I was going to search for a blog on beekeeping. So it quite genuinely took that much time to find a blog on beekeeping. If I was into beekeeping, this is the place to go.
So can anyone add comments to that blog, or do you have to be members of that community?
Okay, blogs, unlike wikis, blogs are typically, almost completely, owned by individual people. So only the owners of that blog would add content to that blog. If somebody else had something else to say, they start their own blog.
But often you have spaces where you can comment on entries that they can not be published.
Absolutely. This one doesn't. It's getting less and less now because of spam.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Very often a blog will allow comments. Blogger is a major service for this. Another major service for this is LiveJournal. And this will be their homepage. I haven't actually created a LiveJournal account. It used to be you had to be invited to create a LiveJournal account. They've changed that now, probably because of competition from Blogger. LiveJournal is much more of a community site than Blogger is, because in LiveJournal you also have what you call friends. And so they form these little networks of friends among themselves, and very often a friend will comment on a friend's blog. So it's much more community-oriented. But it's still the same concept. Put up your post. LiveJournal's been around for a long time.
Check the stats down lower right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. User stats. Total, 5,198,033. That'll be users.
So it's more than 4 million.
Pardon?
We've got more than 4 million.
Yeah, but active, which is the number that I'm working on, 2,309,627 active users. Huge numbers.
Yeah,
Actually, that's been going up like a rock, like a rocket. LivePost stats. 18,367 posts per hour. On this one site. 306 posts per minute. Isn't that something?
That's a lot of people with a lot of time on their hands.
A lot of people with a lot of time. It's this explosion of creativity, isn't it? People say, if you don't pay people for content, people won't produce content because there's no incentive. My point is something like this. Nobody's getting a dime. And they're posting 306 posts a minute. This whole argument, you have to pay people so that they'll have incentive to create, has been completely destroyed by sites like Blogger or LiveJournal. I can never remember how to spell it. Movable type. Is it .org? Oh. Okay. I think this is something else. Yeah. It's very nice, but the futility and sometimes the uselessness of Flash, because I still don't know what they sell. Okay. Yeah, here we go. Movable type is software that you can download. You have to pay them money for it. But it's software that you can download and install on your own server in order to set up a site, a blogging site of your own. It's pretty popular among developers. The thing with Blogger and LiveJournal is these are what's called hosted sites, where your content is on somebody else's website. And so your blog name, like the one I just made was, what was it called? yukonmania.blogspot.com. But if you wanted something like yukonmania.com, then you get software like this. You install it on a web server and do it that way.
And Blogger also has advanced settings where you can FTP your blog to your own domain if you have a
That's right. That's a good point. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, you don't have to host it. It used to be you had to host it there, but that's new, yeah. Where you can just send your blog from Blogger to your own website. That was actually a pretty smart move on their part. Now, movable type, as I say, is commercial software. And about not quite a year ago, they raised their rates, and it was a big rebellion. And the replacement for movable type in the open source community is a piece of software called WordPress. WordPress is the open source, free software, download and install. Now, I have WordPress running on my site. And, whoops, that's not it. And it wasn't working as of this morning. Okay, well, it's working even less well now. Anyhow, so I'm not going to get into it. I sent in a note to someone back home saying, can you please look at this? And obviously he did, because now it doesn't produce the error message, but it doesn't produce anything at all. Yeah. I can register, but I can't log in. Oh, well. Such is life. Sometimes they don't work. My installation of WordPress is a bit wonky. Although, and it's a bit old, too, over the last year, because of all the refugees from movable type have gone to WordPress, and they started improving WordPress. The community has sort of descended on the software. So WordPress is open source software you can install on a web server and make that available. There's a big project in the University of Prince Edward Island using blogging software. What they've done at UPEI is they've made it possible for every student in the university to have their own blog. And what's really neat about the UPEI project is It was done in collaboration with the student association and especially with the student newspaper. So it's very much a student-run initiative. UPEI sort of gave them the space and said, go to it. And the students with some staff advisors went to it. And now every student, UPEI, every administrator, every staff member can have a blog. Doesn't mean they all do. You can't really force people to write creatively. But they have that capacity. So if you're interested in this, I definitely recommend following up with the people there. If we go to my site, I might be able to just find it. What's the fastest way to do it? I'm not happy with my search. I use Google, which is nice, but oh, here we go. It's here somewhere. Here we go. Okay, this is a blog report about weblogs at UPEI. That looks like one that was made out of WordPress, that blog that we were just at. Here's the weblogs at UPEI homepage, and the address is weblogs.upei.ca. And if you go in there, follow the links in that around, and look at the about page and that, and you'll get a lot of background and information. How am I doing on time? When do you kick me out of here?
Well, we were going to
run
until 11:30, but you can push it a little bit.
All right. Everybody's all right with that? How are we doing so far? Is this interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What else do I want to say about blogs specifically? Okay. What I want to do now, I believe this is probably next on the list. Oh yeah, right. Me being me, I wrote my own blogging software. So this is a rare view. People don't get to see this a whole lot. This is the back end of my website. If I want to create a link on my website, as you can see, I've just bookmarked the page. So anybody else, they get a login screen. But and so this must link to something. UConn.com. And I create, and that's how I create an entry in my own newsletter. It's just like that. And then here's my navigation at the bottom. I created my own system because I wasn't really happy with a lot of these content management systems. One of the things that I wanted for my site is very specifically defined content. So I can create a link, a page on my website, an article, a mailing list, site information, like about another site, categories, a box, which is a little bit of content I put on a page, templates, and if I go into the administration's view here, you can see I have a lot more of other things too, just on the back end that I can create as I need. So I'll list the pages. Here are all the pages on my website, and as you can see, I can go in and edit any of these pages. And so here's the page that creates OL Daily. This is the content for OL Daily, and what I've done is create something that's a little bit like Cold Fusion, where it just grabs the information from the database, brings it out, brings it together, organizes it, formats it, and then prints it on a web page. That's my system. That's the 3-minute version of my system. One of these days, I'll be sort of like done the software. I've been working on this for years and years and years. I'm never happy with the code. so I never release it. But one of these days, I'm actually going to say, okay, I'm going to stop here, do a nice release version of it, and let people have it. And again, of course, it'll all be open source. But I'm not the world's greatest programmer, so, you know, when I release code, it works, but it leaves people scratching their heads sometimes. So I'm not going to actually update the page because I want to keep... I don't want a junk entry on the top of my mailing list. Now, yes. One of the reasons why I created my own system is that I wanted a capacity that at the time wasn't present in blogging software, wasn't present in content management systems. And that's the capacity to produce automatically something called an RSS feed. Now you might say, what is an RSS feed? Oops, that's not an RSS feed. Let's go to my home page. You'll see on web pages a lot. Yeah, but not on mine. Why not? There it is. A little button that says, a little orange button, sometimes it says RSS, sometimes it says XML. And if you click on that, you get what really sort of looks like gibberish. But what this is an XML representation of the content on my website. And it's kind of hard to see, especially for you guys that are looking on the computer screen. It's sort of hard to see. But if you went to my website and clicked on that little orange button, you'd see it. And what this is simply a structured summary of my website. RSS is sometimes said to stand for Rich Site Summary. Sometimes it's said to stand for Really Simple Syndication. And sometimes it's said not to be called RSS at all. It's called Atom, and it really is different than this. And this is a bit of an aside, but I think it's a worthwhile aside. Because in our field, learning technology, we hear a lot about standards, right? And learning object metadata, and controlled vocabularies, and standards bodies, IEEE, and ISO, and all of that. RSS has no standards body, has no organized support at all. It's not recognized really at all. There's no organization that determines what an RSS feed will look like. They can't even agree on the name of it. And yet, it works. In fact, RSS is the most widely used form of the semantic web at this point in time. In fact, well, it's not really part of the semantic web because, of course, the World Wide Web Consortium doesn't support it. But when people talk about the semantic web, RSS right now is it. It's an XML representation of information. And in my view, it's the only way the semantic web and standards ever really should develop, and that's by use by the people who would have to use the standards. So all this does is it summarizes my site. Excuse me. Up here is the name of the site, where it is. Down here is a list of the items on the site. First item, New Directions in Learning, because it was the first item in my newsletter. I sent it out this morning. Here's the link. Here's the description. And if we scroll down a little bit, you see the next item. Here's the next item on my site. IBM Apple Delivered Digital Media Standard. Here's the link. Here's the description. That's all an RSS file is. Now, it has slightly different flavors, about 9 different flavors of RSS. But the main thing is, I have a way now of representing the content of my site that is machine readable. That means somebody, some computer program out there could access this automatically and retrieve it and display it. And you might think, well, what's the good of this? For those of you who were here last night, know where this is going. The good of this is This is something that I've created, but there are other systems like this as well. What this is a site called EduRSS. This is what's called an aggregator or a harvester. And what a site like that does, it's a computer program that goes to websites that are out there in the world, checks their RSS, and brings the RSS back. So, EduRSS collects the RSS feeds from all of these different blogs. Now, some of them are blogs, some of them are news sites, because all of the newspapers now are using RSS. The BBC uses RSS. Government of Canada uses RSS. I feel very pleased about that one, because I kind of pushed and prodded a little bit. Darcy Norman, his weblog. And here's the RSS from Darcy Norman's site. And there it is. It's just the same sort of thing, right? Because it's always the same, or more or less the same, these programs can automatically read it. So what I've got on EduRSS now is all the stuff that's being written in our field today. And here it is. Here's what's been written today. Those of you who were here last night, you'll notice this is a completely different list, because there's a lot of stuff that gets written in our field. Oh, you are moving that. Okay, enough.
Well, you're just trying to challenge me.
Yeah, it's fun with videos. Now, I'm not the only person in the world who's written an RSS feed. There's a site called Feedster. Feedster aggregates or harvests a large number of all the weblogs and RSS feeds that are up there. If you think about that, yeah, they're bringing in content from, I don't know, 4 million, 5 million or whatever sites a day. And at any given time on Feedster, you can do a search. Remember, someone was asking before, how do you find a blog and such and such? Let's see what's been written on beekeeping today. Okay. I don't know what that is. Now, I'm going into these sight unseen. So, here's a post about, I just finished a book on beekeeping last week, and da-da-da-da-da. And I could go on. Of course, what I do I search for myself. You might think, why would I do that? Well, I can find out very quickly and efficiently what anybody is saying in the whole blogosphere about stuff that I've posted. So, I got my own stuff. I see my MP3s have been picked up. That's the audio from the talk that I did last night. That audio is now out there in the world circulating because it was listed in my RSS feed. It's got picked up by WebJ. And it will have been picked up by more.
Last night's talk, that's up already?
Yeah. It's not simply, this is the thing. It's not simply that last night's talk is posted in audio on my site. It's that everybody in the world can read it, or can listen to it. And if they're interested in our topic, they will all know, through systems like Feedster, that I've produced this, it's there, it's available.
Then your newsletter said that it was published 1 hour ago. Is that 1 hour ago when Feedster picked it up?
That's right, that's when Feedster picked it up. I actually published it, let's see, it's about 11:30. About 2 hours and 15 minutes ago.
So
internet time, right?
Sorry, this is a stupid question, but how is this different than just doing a normal Google search?
Well, it's different because Feedster is getting the results right away, like from an hour ago.
Yeah.
It's different because Feedster is organizing them according to time. So we're getting the most recent things first.
And it's only picking up blogs.
And it's only picking up blogs. It's only picking up RSS feeds. So not getting all kinds of stuff, all those commercial websites and stuff, we're basically not getting through Feedster.
But you could get the same kind of content through Google, but with a bunch of other...
That's right. And it'll take longer. So, like, Google won't have my audio feeds up.
It's not enough to do.
Yeah. Another site that does pretty much the same thing. A site called Technorati. It's just technorati.com. And again, as always. Oh, UConn. You don't want to search for me? All right, so what do we got about the UConn in the blog sphere right now? Something looks like it might be in Spanish. Yeah. Well, UConn, the thing is, UConn's a proper name, so we're going to get this in all different languages. And if you use just an ordinary English word, like, say, I don't know, territory, say, then you'll probably get mostly English sites. So here's a post in a blog. It looks a bit like a blogger. Yeah, it's a blogger blog. And what are they talking about? Some cyclist around and over. I guess they've reached the Yukon. You see somebody going by in a bicycle? Pardon? Well, there you go. There he is. So, and what else have we got? Thing is, too, they're using UConn these days as a brand name, which seems to me a bit wrong, but 21st century, or 21st century gold rush in UConn gold information. Okay, whatever that is.
Your site's not showing up,
Stephen?
Your post is not showing up there?
Nope. Probably hasn't been picked up. My Technorati is a bit slower than Feedster. It probably won't show up for another couple hours.
In your blog, you used
Whitehorse. Oh, I did use the word UConn. Yeah, pretty sure. So it should be, yeah, there. So it should be picked up. Like I said, it would take a little bit for Technorati to pick it up. But it will pick it up.
Why is there a time between the two? Like, what makes it different?
It's just where in their harvesting cycle they are. The way these sites work, they got a big list of sites, and they start on the list. Harvest this, harvest this, harvest this. And it's just a matter of where it is in the cycle. And I was earlier in the Feedster cycle than I was in the Technorati. That's a bit of a simplification. They actually have multiple processors doing all kinds of simultaneous searches, but still, it works out too. There's a cycle. Now, a neat thing here's a site called Bloglines. And what Bloglines is a way for you to customize how you read RSS feeds. Because there are 4 million of them. Who's interested in all of that? Typically, people are interested in maybe 20 or 30 out of 4 million. So something like Technorati or Feedster, pretty good for a search, but you don't want that to be your daily reading. Bloglines allows you to very specifically subscribe to certain RSS feeds. Here are the RSS feeds that I subscribe to through Bloglines. George Siemens, I met him a bit earlier today. This is his website, his RSS feed, or it will be once it loads. You can tell we have students in the college today, right? It's not quite as fast as it was last night. Oh, I guess I didn't click on that very well. That's really annoying. Yeah, it's just, if you click on it twice, it defaults to saying that you've seen everything. The nice thing about blog lines is it'll only show you the things you haven't read yet, which is nice, but if you click on it twice, it assumes you've read everything. And then you have to do, you know, give all the posts from the last month. So here's the stuff that George has written on his website, in his blog. And this is the thing. Blogger creates RSS feeds automatically. LiveJournal creates RSS feeds automatically. PostNuke and Scoop that I showed you earlier create RSS feeds automatically. All of these content authoring tools create RSS automatically so that you, as the person who's doing the writing, don't need to worry about it. When you put a post in, all of that's done for you, and your content is sent off into this network. So that's what George did. George is probably using WordPress these days. I'm not sure, but I imagine he would be. And so these are the things that he wrote just over the last few days. The most recent thing he did is he wrote a little item about Google Scholar. And so we can look and just click on the link, and here's George's blog. And here's the little post that he made. Didn't have a whole lot to say about it. What do you say about it? And there you go. And that's... No. The reason why people like things like blog lines is that it makes reading content a lot simpler. You see this list here on this side. Most of these are in bold because I haven't been keeping up. But Once I've read all the posts in a given blog, then it'll just go to regular text. So what happens is, when I go to blog lines, if there's new content in the blog, it'll show up as bold. Otherwise, it'll just be plain text. So I can tell instantly where the new content is. Think of what I would have to do otherwise to follow these writers, these websites. I have to go to each one of these websites individually and check and see if there's anything new on it. Huge pile of work. Who wants to go to a website just to determine that there's nothing there to read? But this will tell me all of the new stuff that's out there. Here's my own. This is my newsletter from yesterday, picked up by blog lines from my RSS feed and displayed there. And here's my MP3 audio. And it really is this easy. Just click on the link. It's the talk from yesterday. It's that easy for somebody who's out there. They just subscribed to my feed and blog lines, and this time, less than 12 hours later, they're listening to the audio of the talk from last night.
Can you tell how many subscribers you have?
Not directly, no. I can keep track of how often my RSS feed is hit, but, you know, it's hit once an hour by blog lines. And then, actually, yeah, now that I think about it, blog lines does tell me I have 279 subscribers in blog lines. Now, the thing is, there are many RSS readers out there. If you did a search on Google for RSS readers, well, let's do a search on Google for RSS readers. My brain in action. Here are RSS readers. This is on a site, buckspace.com/RSS/readers. And the top picks, Windows these days, Sharp Reader, I guess, is the top pick, new to me. Web, blog lines, of course. And Fedidesk is one that I've used since time immemorial. I used to have it on my laptop, but then Windows 2000 died. Feed Demon is popular, Feed Reader is popular, and more.
You mentioned last night that, I'm not going to use the terminology correct, but an
RSS feed will pick up a blog if you have used the correct meta words inside your blog, so that the RSS reader will choose your blog because it has to do with online communities,
right,
etc., over something to do with that.
Well, okay. What I was talking about last night, now, with these RSS readers that I've just showed you, you sort of have to know what blogs that you're looking for. You sort of have to know the topics that you're interested in and know where to find them. If I look here, is this the right page? Or is this something? Yeah. Blog lines, well, we won't be able to see it really. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. I sort of hoped it did, but it wouldn't. Blog lines will look at the list of blogs that you've subscribed to, and then it will recommend others based on content. So what I did in blog lines, right, went into blog lines, subscribed to my own RSS feed, and then it began suggesting other blogs that were similar to mine. I thought that was a neat trick. But typically, what you have to do is, when you go to a website, I wanted to stay here, but oh well. When you go to a website, you find that little orange button. And what I do is I just right-click on the orange button and copy the linkation. And then I'll go over to blog lines. It says add. And just add. And then I wait for it. And I'll paste. And it's going to tell me I'm already subscribed to that blog, which I knew. But doing that would add it to my list. So this way of doing it, you have to know what you're looking for ahead of time. But of course, you have things like Feedster and Technorati. And there's some other sites out there as well. Like Blogdex is one I like, that help you find things that you'll be interested in. Another thing, and this is why I wanted to stay at George Seaman's site, is actually a lot of blogs have a feature that's called Trackback. But what Trackback is a neat thing. Suppose you write a blog post and you put it up, and somebody else who has their own blog, they write a post about your post. Now, what Trackback is a way for the second person to let the first person know that they've written a post about their post. It's a bit complicated.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
If you go to a blog and it doesn't have a button for the Trackback, just go send them an email if you cite them?
I would just send them an email. Yeah, this is the thing with Trackback is you have to have the software to make it work. You know, if you have movable type or something like that, Trackback will work automatically. But basically what Trackback is it's an address that other people can use. It's a URL that other people can use to send information to your blogging system. So the way it works is, if using something like movable type or something like that, if you've read the RSS feed, the RSS feed will contain the Trackback address in it, and then movable type will automatically send the message to the other blog. I don't have that on my system because it's a pain to set it up, quite frankly. And so Trackback does tend to favor people who use systems like movable type. But basically, the process is called pinging, whereby my weblog tool pings or sends a message to your weblog tool. And what happens is, the way it works out in practice, and I'll see if Darcy Norman has... I know he uses this. Oops. I think he uses this. Uh, actually, let me. I know. I'll go to Olivine. That probably would have been a better search term. There are other people out there in the world called Alan Levine, but he's the only one who's Cogdog Blog. Oh, his dog died. And so now it's sort of grayed out, which is sad. So here's a blog post. And we get to the bottom of the blog post. And comment zero, track back zero. Okay, so we'll go down. Everything zero. Here we go. Comments one, track back one. So we can look at the comment. These are just comments that people have added. And so here's the comment that somebody added. If we click on track back, what we'll see here is a link to another weblog. And we follow this link. Here we go. To another weblog called, well, whatever it was called. It's Bruce Landon's website. And I'm not sure which post this is, but one of these posts refers and links to Alan Levine's post. And so you get this chain, right? That's what TrackBack does, is it gives you this chain. So, because I'm still answering your question. If you found a site that you're interested in, TrackBack allows you to follow this chain to other similar sites that will cover the same sort of topic that you're interested in. Now, what I did on my site, I did things a bit differently. I don't like TrackBack. It's a real pain to set up and install. And I think that this will be abused. People will spam it eventually. So what I did on my website is... Oops, that's not where I wanted to go. Yeah. I create a thing whereby... trying to read and talk at the same time, it just doesn't work. What I do on my website is the content comes in and my aggregator analyzes the content for topics. And then I create specific, topic-specific feeds. So let's, for example, I'll pick something at random, course modules. I don't know if there's anything there or not. Yeah, there's something. Okay. So here's course modules. What I've done is I've filtered the RSS feeds from the 300 or so instructional technology blogs that I aggregate, filter that, remix it together, and then I feed it forward as a new RSS feed. So here's my RSS feed, all about whatever the topic this was. Something modules. Yeah, just course modules. Now the neat thing is, I can take this URL, this URL here, I'll just click on it, and copy link location. Now, when I go to blog lines, my feeds, and I paste this in here, I'll subscribe. And it's going to take a couple of seconds, because what BlogLines is going to do is going to contact HURSS, retrieve a copy of the feed. And it's done that. And here's the course module's content from HURSS. Now, I need to fix this a wee bit. It's one of these things where you write it yourself. I need a better title there, right? It really should say HURSS course modules. Because it'll be a bit hard to find on the side panel there. But still, now I've got my own personalized feed, very specialized feed, on a very precise little topic that brings in all the content from all these people who are writing in instructional technology on the topic of course modules. And so, I log on to BlogLines next time. I see the bold post, or the bold text there. I click on that, I'm away to the races. So, In our field, my recommendation at this point would be go to EdURSS topics. Pick the topics that are interesting to you. Subscribe to them. Actually, give me a few days so I can put proper titles on it. But subscribe to them. And now you have a very powerful system that gives you exactly the content that you're interested in this field. And my take on this, my argument is, this is probably more authoritative content than you can get elsewhere. It'll be better content than you get in journals, much better than newspapers, just because they don't cover this stuff at all. This is the source for content in our field. EdURSS is currently the most popular service on my website. I forget how many hits I get on there today. I get lots. And it's people getting this very specific content delivered to them personally. I think I've probably taken as much extra time as I should for today. So I'll wrap it up here so that you can go into the lab and play with some of this stuff yourself. There's Brian Lamb's page is set up, and you can go create blogs at Blogger or mess up Wikipedia and get your hands on to some of this stuff. So thanks a lot for your time. I really appreciate it. And I'll be around for the next little while as well if you have any questions or comments that you want to make.
Our t-shirts so much. We wanted to thank you again for coming into the RSS and cool stuff talk. So we got you a t-shirt.
Thank you. All my own personal, I'm blogging t-shirt. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for coming.
Thanks.